This is the Politics and More podcast. I'm David Remnick. In October, which may seem like eons past, but was just a few months ago, really, we assembled one of our biggest and best New Yorker festivals ever. It was kind of a big to-do because it was the 20th anniversary of the New Yorker Festival, and we pulled out all the stops, with interviews and live performances in venues all over New York and packed houses, if you can imagine such a thing as a packed house. We'll start with Hasan Minhaj. You could call him one of the many protégés of Jon Stewart. He worked as a correspondent on The Daily Show, and that was a role that blended comedy with pretty serious political analysis. Minhaj launched his own show, Patriot Act, on Netflix in 2018. And in 2 short years, the show won both an Emmy and a Peabody Award. When he spoke with The New Yorker's Carrie Batten last fall, Minhaj had just had something of a viral moment testifying before Congress on the subject of student loans.
Now look, we know the deck is stacked against student borrowers in ways that it wasn't 10 or even 15 years ago. And they deserve some basic protections. Americans should not have to go bankrupt pursuing higher education. And they should never be preyed upon by underregulated loan servicing companies. So members of this committee, we know the government is capable of stepping in during a financial crisis. So really all I'm asking today is, why can't we treat our student borrowers the way we treat our banks? Because 44 million Americans, that is too big to fail. Thank you so much for your time, and I will now go back to where I came from.
Did you show the Maxine Waters reaction?
Maxine Waters reaction was where she's just like...
She's like, ooh.
Yeah.
It's like a meme now of her like, ooh.
Yeah, it's really good. First of all, how does one get in the position to testify before Congress in this capacity?
I don't know. I thought it was a joke. They were like, we're doing our first hearing about the student loan crisis, and would you like to testify? And I guess that's what you need now on Capitol Hill to get legislation changed. You just got to get a comedian that's available, and they come in and do five, and hopefully it moves the needle.
Right. And I mean, it's interesting, in this clip, I don't think of you as a troll of a comic, generally. That's I don't think that's your role, usually.
Okay. But thank you.
But you are a little bit in this video. You're pretty confrontational, and I wonder, did you have to psych yourself up for that?
Like, sort of like shadow box in the hallways of Congress.
And just think about kind of like all of these like older people in suits leering at you. And like, that sounds scary.
You know what's really interesting? As soon as I got there, it's pretty sad. Like, Congress is pretty... I thought it was going to be like House of Cards. Like, just like witty banter, amazing lighting, just... hot jawlines. It's not like that.
Yeah,
it's like the DMV. You show up. They're like, here's a Men's Health from 2014 and, you know, some bottled water. And it's pretty much like that. But I just thought it was a bipartisan position. I thought of all the sort of, there's a lot of third rail issues in America. I feel like student loans and student loan borrowers hits constituents in both parties. So I felt like if there was one issue that affects my generation the most and future generations, it was that.
So I wanna talk a little bit about Patriot Act. This is a show that has such a broad scope and such a high level understanding of world events, but then also such a nitty gritty, niche, kind of in the weeds way of understanding the world as well. And I would just be curious to hear you talk about the way you consume news and what your media diet is like, and just how do you educate yourself on everything that is going on?
Yeah, I think I'm really lucky. I got my undergrad degree in political comedy at The Daily Show. Like, I was there 4 years. I learned under John, Trevor, Steve Bodo, Jen Flans, like this amazing institution of people that have been there 15 plus years, you know? And they taught me really quick why people turn to our shows. And I realized people basically turn to our show to synthesize the news and basically summarize it within a one sentence take. Mm-hmm. And generally, whoever had the best take that just makes you laugh out loud, you go with that. That's your act one. And going from that, then I quickly was able to realize, all right, I wanted to be able to do that in longer form storytelling. So I needed to get like a great news team around me. And that started with a really great news producer and then working with junior researchers and fact checkers and sort of just pulling from really, really great, amazing places, the New York Times, AP, Vice. There's all these really amazing journalists that I was following on Twitter that I was a big fan of and just reached out, and we slowly built this team. They would come in and with really great stories, and then the comedy writers would start pitching takes, and we just sort of back and forth.
So I'm going to change gears a little bit. Does your wife think you're funny?
No. No, not at all. No.
Did she think you were funny when you first met her?
No.
No?
No. No, she just keeps it real. Like, I was doing a movie with Kate McKinnon, and she was like, Kate McKinnon is really, really funny. That's funny. And she's right. Like, Kate McKinnon is so undeniably funny.
Wow. Yeah. Your wife is a tough crowd.
She keeps it 1,000.
Yeah. So much of your work is about family and about heritage and about parenting in particular.
Yeah.
And, you know, I would love to hear you talk about, you know, what kind of parenting things that you have adopted from your parents that you're kind of coming to understand now that you have your own daughter.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely take a ton of inspiration from, you know, especially my mom and dad, just their work ethic and their hustle. And they just never took anything for granted. Everything, and this can be a good thing, feels like it can go away at any time. So make the most of it. Like, I still have that to this day. I'm not going to show up to set, you know, drunk, high, late, those sort of things. Just I can feel mom and dad like watching me being like, you're very lucky to do this. They're gonna take it away from you if you don't do it right. That desire to sort of overachieve. But I think the biggest difference, and I owe this to them, is their whole thing when they came to this country was surviving. And I feel like my generation, and I hope my daughter's generation, it's about living. And there's a big difference in that. When you're surviving, you sort of placate the status quo. You don't want to ruffle any feathers. You don't tell Ellen, pronounce my name properly. Like, put some respect on it.
Mm-hmm.
To quote Birdman. Like, yeah. Ummi and Abu would just be like, let Ellen call you whatever she wants. And I'm like, nah, we're not going to do that. We're doing this on daytime. Say Hasan Minhaj. Like, straight up, say my name, Muhammad Ali style. And and that's the difference between surviving and living. And I want my daughter to sort of unapologetically be herself. I want her to be able to talk about her background and what she believes in and what she's about. I just want her to have that audacity.
Mm-hmm. And to know to tell people to pronounce her name correctly.
Yeah. Ava DuVernay wore this super dope shirt. It said, I'm my ancestor's wildest dreams. And mom, dad, you're here. You know, Dadi, if Ummi, if they could see what we're doing, I think about that shirt a lot. Like, I really think about that shirt. That, like, Angrezlo Kisamne, I talk that way. I talk that talk in front of, like, our white bosses.
Yeah.
Like, I run my mouth in front of the British. You know what I mean? Like, I think about, like, my grandfather, you know, who isn't here, and, like, how he would feel. And to do it with a level of sophistication and elegance. Don't, like, use crass language or bad language, but to carry myself as if I'm equal, as if I belong just as much as they do.
Mm-hmm.
And for that to not be like, wow, that's awesome. No, it's like, no, that's the norm. That's the standard.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You didn't meet your sister until, how old were you, 8?
Yeah, no. So my sister was born in the States, and then
She
grew up with my grandparents for a little bit and then came back when I was around 8 years old.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But so, I mean, does your sister have a different experience? I mean, I should ask her. She's here.
You should ask her, yeah. Yeah, no. Totally, yeah.
Let's bring her up. No, anyway, well, I won't.
This is like an intervention.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, you know what? Like, she's been really great with me, too. Like, checking my perspective. And I remember this was like, we had this really great conversation. You remember this, right after Homecoming King. You were like, that's not the way my experience was with mom or dad. Like, that's not the way I saw the world. Like, you are so melodramatic.
Which parts were?
Just all of it.
Yeah.
Just like the whole thing from start to finish. What is wrong with you? I've always wanted to actually talk to like Amy Sedaris and David Sedaris about this, of like, hey, is what Like, just can you adjudicate this? You know,
sounds like a pitch for Netflix.
I don't know, but you know, it made me realize, like, she was like, that's not the way I saw. I like my POV of it was and is, and I realized I was like, this is actually really indicative of a larger conversation in art. A lot of times with art, there's this convo around, what is your writer's room like? What is this like? Why doesn't this show represent what I want it to be? And instead of trying to change Homecoming King, Aisha needs Homecoming Queen. She needs to write her version of that. And you can see the nuances and the beauty and the flaws of that. And I think it really shaped my perspective on the next generation of artists that are starting to make and develop work. Mm-hmm. Like, I think there's a lot of stuff that I see currently in pop culture. If you think that it's missing or there's a gap here, what you need is a platform for people to share their perspective and story, because no one story will be able to encapsulate everybody's perspective.
Mm-hmm. One thing that I love about Patriot Act is how much you talk about the political landscape in India, which I feel like is a subject that Americans are very detached from and they're just willfully do not engage with. I recently saw that photograph of Prime Minister Modi holding hands with Donald Trump in Texas in a stadium. And can you just break down what that entire situation was for this audience? Because it was so confusing to me.
What did you think? What I would love to see is what did you think was going on?
Like the it was 45,000 Indian people in Texas in a stadium celebrating the new prime minister who dislikes Muslims, right?
Sure.
And Trump is like, here's a guy who is like the Indian me, so I'm gonna run through and like this is a photo op and
that was my and they were full on holding hands. You nailed it.
Okay.
I had to be there. It was just what an interesting combination. You have two fan bases. It's like an Indian Trump rally. You have gun nuts and vegetarians, and it's like. You know what I mean? Like, there's one group of people that is like, we cannot put animals in cages. And they're like, you're right. We should only put children in cages.
Yeah.
And it was just merged that day. It was the most bizarre thing I've ever seen in my life.
And in that episode, in one episode about the Indian elections, you talk about how you had been discouraged by your family and Indian people from talking about their, like, don't talk about it.
It's a third rail issue. How are you going to win this?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, you want to talk about India and Pakistan and Kashmir. It's a context that we'll understand here in New York is like Palestine, Israel. How do you want to win this debate? It's filled with like a ton of detail and a ton of nuance and a ton, you know, it's not as simple as what you think it is, and you're going to make a lot of people upset. Either you went too far or you didn't go far enough. But to me, again, like, I want, you know, you don't know how long you have these shows for. I want to use the opportunity that I have to say what I feel and to really just put it out there while I still have the chance to.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to do a little impresario thing and have them pull up a clip of this for anybody who hasn't seen it. It is super funny. Let's take a look.
Hassan, I saw your show on student loan. It was amazing.
I'm actually going to do an episode about the Indian election.
What?
Are you out of your mind?
You're being stupid now.
Indian elections are a definite no-no. There is a lot of garbage outside, and that garbage is going to come on your face if you open your mouth on Indian politics.
You cannot talk about Narendra Modi. You cannot talk about Priyanka Gandhi.
You cannot talk out in the open.
What about on the internet?
Never on internet.
You are an NRI.
You are an ABCD. You're an American-born Desi.
You don't know the Indian politics. It is the world's largest democracy, and I'm going to talk about it.
Politics is like a jalebi, round, you don't know where it ends, where it starts.
Democracy is for people with power, people with muscle power and money power. It is not for you and me.
It's for gangs.
You are going to make millions of people angry.
With the Hindus, with the Muslims, with the Sikhs.
They're going to kill you. You will be no more.
There will be an accident. You'll be burned to death. You're gone. Aapko problem chahiye?
No, I don't want a problem.
Haan, toh kyun karna hai? You can talk about anything else.
Talk about cricket.
Talk about sneakers.
That's more comical.
Did you piss anyone off in your close orbit? But
yeah, yeah, I pissed a lot of people off. Yeah. People are very upset.
Yeah.
I mean, but again, look, like for me, I really do believe this. Like, I really admire the journalists that are out there doing really amazing work. And we have an incredible privilege being here in the States. Number one, safety is assumed. And number two, we really do have freedom of speech. Like, yes, there are certain limits to it in certain contexts, but in ways in which journalists in other parts of the world, they don't get to speak this way. And so to me, if you do have that privilege, just be surgical with the way you use it. And to me, this is the opportunity that all the comic friends that I have and the political satirist friends that I have around the world, they don't have those privileges.
Mm-hmm.
So... yeah.
Absolutely. And have you been to India in recent years?
Yeah. I go back and I've done stand-up there and yeah.
What is the audience like for your stand-up sets there?
Well, it depends. So like depending on where you go and like the ticket price, like you're getting a different type of audience.
Yeah.
And also because there's like Hindi speaking stand-up comedy and then there's English speaking stand-up comedy. Then there's like mixed. And then there's so many different languages and cultures within India. So there's like sub-genres within it too. It's kind of like the way rap is now, where you're like, that person's a rapper, and you're like, yeah, Post Malone is part of hip-hop.
Yeah.
It's like that. You're like, that's a comedian that does it in Telugu? You're like, yeah, he does it in Telugu. That's the Post
Malone. I want to know who the Post Malone of India is.
Yeah.
of Indian comedy.
I don't know, but if a dude had face tattoos, that dude would be wild, because you know his family wouldn't be cool with it. That's like a very permanent F you to your parents.
That's a great note to end on. Let's give it up for Hasan.
Thanks, you guys.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Bye. Take care.
Hasan Minhaj speaking with staff writer Carrie Batten. Season 6 of Patriot Act is available on Netflix now.